Well, more and more and in different ways, loneliness has been increasingly recognized as a crisis. Loneliness has been recognized as obviously a social issue that so many people are struggling with and struggling with on a regular basis. It's also being recognized as a public health crisis, and there's actually been growing evidence recently about the harmful effects that loneliness has on our mental state and our physical well-being. There's been some research in the recent years that has linked loneliness to all kinds of health problems, including things like heart disease, stroke, depression, having a weakened immune system. Some studies have suggested that people who experience chronic loneliness, so like an ongoing, long-term feeling of loneliness, can be as dangerous to one's health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. In fact, you might have heard of this a bunch of years ago. The United States Surgeon General actually declared that loneliness was an epidemic, trying to emphasize that this is a problem that is affecting a huge amount of people, a big percentage of the population, and it needs to be addressed. And the effects of loneliness are linked, again, to some of those mental and physical struggles that we have, to healthcare needs, even seeing that the rise in healthcare needs and costs are increasing because of it, and of course, to our mental challenges. And the rise of this loneliness, not that loneliness is new, maybe it's more and more of our awareness of it, but maybe there are also some ways that, broadly speaking, in our culture, or some different factors that attribute, we could attribute to the rise in sort of this experience of loneliness. Here's just a few of them that are sort of the common ones. If you do a little bit of research, that you'll see people talk about a lot. One of them is our work culture. So we have a work culture. I don't think this is surprising to just about anybody, but for many of us, a lot of hours, a lot of our work is about how efficient we can be. We're busy, our schedules fill up. Sometimes our days are so full because of our work and how we work and how we commute that, you know, by the time you commute into work and you've got all the things that you need to do and you come back and there's just not much left in the tank, not much left hours in the day except to sort of do whatever you need to do at home to get ready, get to bed and start again the next day. We've got heavy pressures that many of us at our work are hanging on to that kind of mount up on our shoulders, and sometimes it feels like I'm the only one that is carrying these things or I am the one that has to carry them, and that can be really tough. We've seen, I think, a decline in a lot of community ties or institutions, that the way that we live our lives have become very individualistic. Some of the things in previous generations where people would find some deep social connection that would help them in that loneliness, making sure they're feeling connected to community, are no longer as strong. Not as many people are connecting to them. That could be even places of worship and religious activity, such as church, where some of these things just have not become, they're not as strong as they used to be. There's not as many people who are involved in them, and therefore there is a bit more of a gap. Technology plays a role. It's impossible to deny the role of technology in social media and the role that it has in our social lives, how we connect with each other. When we think about that, there's nobody who's going to say, oh, we just need to get rid of technology. We need to kind of wipe the slate clean. No more technology, no more social media. I think everybody realizes that's not realistic. That's not going to happen. We also realize that when it comes to the technology that we have, there's so many positive aspects to that. And we even this week can understand that today because after a snowstorm last night, there's people we can connect with that maybe would be unconnected otherwise through our technology, through things that we can do online. So we're thankful for that. Of course, technology allows us to communicate to people that are a far distance away. It helps us to communicate faster with people than we might otherwise be able to. It helps us to be more efficient. We use technology and social media in our work, and there are some great effects to that. But when you read about what people are saying and what some of the evidence is of where technology is contributing to loneliness in our society, what maybe the most common thread, at least that I've read recently, is that it's when our technology or social media interactions become our primary connections with people, and they take the place of other forms of connection and communication with people that are deeper. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that we could text someone quickly that we wouldn't be able to talk to normally or that's far away. That actually helps us bring a connection. But when all of our connections or our primary connections start to become around, I liked a video or I sent a quick superficial text, and those are now taking the place of face-to-face conversations or take the place of a deeper connection where we're actually going to a deeper level than we could on something that's just really quick and online. It's when those things are now taking the place of something that's more substantial that we're going, okay, what has helped us from a technology perspective is now potentially hindering us with those connections. Loneliness, some people thought, or maybe this was one of the ways people thought, was that there were certain demographics of people that were maybe more susceptible to being lonely. So it may be common to think that loneliness was affecting primarily just people who were older, people who were past retirement age and not socializing the same way that they used to at work or in other places. Studies are starting to find that that's not true, that actually we're reporting that across the age spectrum, there are large percentages of populations who are reporting that they regularly feel lonely, they feel alone, that they're facing challenges that are associated with that loneliness. And so here we are, we're talking in this series about love. We're talking about the different kinds of love. We're talking about the deficiencies that oftentimes we might be experiencing in our lives when it comes to being connected and feeling loved and being able to share love with other people and asking, what are those different kinds of love and how do we foster them? How do we grow them? Today I want to talk about the kind of love that exists between friends, a friendship kind of love. I recently heard Simon Sinek talking about friendship. He's an author and fairly well-known speaker and he's done some research around this. And I just heard him make this point that he said, think about all the areas of our lives. If you think about, for example, self-help resources, if there's an area of your life where you need help, and think of all the resources that we have. So for example, if you'd say, well, I really need some help in my diet. I'm not eating well. There are all kinds of resources that you can find. You can get to a dietitian, you can find all kinds of books, you can find stuff online. There's diets for all sorts of different needs that you might have. There's science that back up different diets and you can learn and research and have someone walk alongside of you and figure out exactly the best diet for you and for whatever it is you might be going through and what's healthy for you. And it's actually really easy to find a million different books on what to eat and how to eat. If you want to figure out how to be successful in your career, you can find career coaches, you can find courses. Again, there's no shortage of resources you're free to find how to get better in your job. If your marriage is struggling, you're hurting in your marriage, we have all kinds of resources there. There's marriage counselors, there's retreats, there's all kinds of stuff. There's actually a huge industry for marriage and resources around marriage. And yet, when it comes to friendship, many of us recognize how important it is to have friends. We might even recognize how difficult it is to feel lonely and to not have somebody that is close to you. And there's very few resources. It's actually very telling to say, how would you learn to be a better friend? How would you learn to have better friendships, to forge better friendships? And if you felt like you didn't have them, where would you go for that? And he makes the point that in so many areas of our lives, there's so many different resources that we can find if we're looking for them and need them. But when it comes to friendship, deep down, we all know that we need friendships. We're experiencing loneliness across the board in a way that we know we're all longing for this. We have a desire for it. And yet we maybe have a fairly shallow experience or understanding of how to be good friends to one another. You remember the show Stranger Things? I know it's a few years since that went on, but became this huge thing, and everybody was watching Stranger Things. If you haven't seen it, it's a sci-fi show, and especially in the beginning, it's about these kids, and they're all friends. There's this close group of friends, and they have all these adventures together. They do all kinds of things together. They've got great relationships with each other, and then they end up fighting the forces of evil from the other world, all this kind of stuff. But it became this phenomenon, and it's set in the 1980s, and it got really popular, even though it was a story about a group of kids, especially the beginning, over a few seasons they get older, but about all these kids, and it became so popular with people who were kids in the 80s when that show was set. And everybody's talking about the nostalgia that connects if you were a kid in the 80s and here's kids in the 80s. So there's the fads and this is the way the cars looked and these were the toys or the things that people played with. These are how people talked. And so they go, man, all these people in that age group really connecting it with the nostalgia. And I remember at that time I was reading an article and it was talking about why are people, you know, who are in their 30s and their 40s connecting with this so much. And the author made a point. He said, yeah, everybody's talking about the nostalgia of the fads and the things that look the way that they were when you were a kid, maybe, and that's why you connected with it. But maybe what the biggest draw is not just the clothes and the hairstyles and all that stuff. Maybe the real draw, this nostalgia for this age group, is looking back to a time when you had those kind of friendships. When you experience, like after school, every day, these are the people I connect with, and we get on our bikes and we go on adventures together, and I tell these people everything. And there was a time when you were a kid where you had that and experienced that, and as you grew up and went through adolescence and then in adulthood and things shifted and changed, you lost some of that, and now you're watching these kids. That's when I was a kid. And yeah, maybe it's the hairstyles and it's the way the cars looked and the ways people talk, but maybe it's also, man, I remember when I had friends like that. And I would love to one day have friends like that again as an adult. Tim Keller made an observation about the kind of love that exists between friends. And he says that in traditional cultures, and our scriptures, we're going to look at in a minute, our scriptures were written over hundreds of years, but all in fairly traditional cultures, especially compared to ours. In traditional cultures, the kind of love that is emphasized and prioritized is the family love. We talked about that in part one of this series. There's a duty, there's an obligation. That's kind of how in traditional societies things are emphasized, is the love between parents and children and between siblings and even a little bit wider extended family. And that is becomes like the cornerstone culturally of society and connection. And then in more liberal or progressive cultures, which compared to most other cultures, ours is, it's more of a romantic or an erotic love that is emphasized. And you can see that and notice that in our society, even if you look at media, you look at the type of magazines or news, the kind of things we read about, even celebrities. We go, what do we want to know? We want to know who's dating who, who's with who, all, you know, those sort of things. And what almost always gets left behind on the back burner is this love that exists between friends. And we all desire it, we want it, but it's easier for us to shove that aside. Here's why. Because without an erotic or romantic love, none of us exist. Without a family love, none of us are raised. And so there are these big essentials for life that, you know, in those two types of love, you really can't shove aside. It's like right in front of you and biologically essential. And then, you know, for you to survive, it's essential to have parents who take care of you or family that takes care of you. And so friendship is one of these things that we desperately need, but also we are afforded the ability to put it aside, to not make it a priority. And so today, we want to dive in a little bit and talk about how do we forge friendships, which are so important, but often in our lives, and you might say, wow, that's true for me. I long for good friends in my life. I need that, but it's not always the thing that I'm focused on. Maybe there's a deficit there for you, or maybe there's a deficit for people around us that we can help with. So we're going to be looking today at the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is a group of short, pithy, memorable sayings that typically help us navigate life, especially when life, and this is most of life, is not black and white, easy to figure out what to do. Proverbs is wisdom, and wisdom dives into those areas of our lives that you can't always just make laws and rules for because life gets messy and you have to wade into those gray areas and figure out how to do things. So the Proverbs are some of these sayings that just help us to think through how we're living and how to live in a wise and skillful way. And in Proverbs, there's a number of verses that talk about friendship. One of the reasons is because as this book was putting together, they realized if you want to have a really good life, if you want to live wisely, you're going to need good friends around you, and you're going to need to be a good friend. So here we go. Number one, I got three things to tell you about friendship and then a few application points. Number one, we need friends. As I said before, this becomes one of the loves and interactions that we intuitively know that we want and desire and even need, but also one that we shove to the side. Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." What is that verse saying? In Hebrew, this is written in Hebrew, and in Hebrew poetry, parallelism is very important. And contrasts, or sometimes the lack of a contrast, really brings out the meaning of verses like this. So a friend loves at all times, contrasted with a brother who is born for adversity. What is that saying? One of the things we talked about last week was that in families, we've got a responsibility to each other. We do things for each other because we are family. We're connected in that way. And so we have a certain commitment. But it's also true that some of your family, while they might love you deeply, you know they'll be there for you during adversity, they might not like you that much. You might not like them that much. And you might say, but we're family, and of course we're going to be there. And that's what it's saying. A brother is born for adversity. Your family is going to show up for you in tough times, but a friend loves at all times. This is great news. This is wonderful. Friends are there for all the times. You know your family will show up during hard times, but here's the joy of having good friends, is that when things are good, you enjoy each other. You go and hang out. You go have coffee. You play golf. Maybe you have similar hobbies that you bond over. When times are good, your friends are there and you enjoy it. When times are tough, your friends are there and they walk with it through you. A friend loves at all times. And family, they're going to be there for you, but friends are there for you in a different way. Proverbs 18:24 says something similar in a slightly different way. It says, "A man or a person of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." This is great. There are, you know, if you're someone who has many companions, maybe you've got many superficial relationships. Well, that's fine. But you might come to ruin. It might be something that is lacking there, that's not what you really need. But there is a friend. There's a really good friend that you need and I need, we all need, who sticks closer than a brother. That word that is translated sticks closer means to cleave in the scripture, means to come together out of a passionate love of commitment. There is a kind of friendship and a kind of love where people are joined together as friends, in good times and in bad times and in all the times. And we need that. And in one sense, and I'm not in this series trying to pit the different loves against each other and saying some are good and some are bad and this one's the best one. They all have overlap and they're all good and they all have their ways that they really shine. And that's why we need the different kind of loves. That's why we're talking about this different four loves in this series. But a love of a friend in this way can be even better, or there's an area that it serves that a family love doesn't always serve. Someone who will cleave to you, someone who will be there in all times. If you have shallow acquaintances, if you only have shallow acquaintances, then there's something you're going to miss that's very important. So number one, we just want to say it out loud. We need friends. It's a very important part of our lives, part of our flourishing, part of our enjoyment of life, part of our support system. And so we don't want to just kind of go through life and go, oh, I don't really have any close friends. Not really a big deal. I've got my family. That's wonderful. But also, yes, we need our friends. Okay, number two. Not only do we need friends, we need good friends. We need friends that are good for us. And let me give you an example of what that is. Also means that we need to be good friends. Proverbs 27:9 says, "The heartfelt counsel of a friend is as sweet as perfume and incense." Again, look at the parallelism. There is a contrast in the first line and the second line. The first line emphasizes an inward experience of joy, something that is really good and beautiful and pleasant that you experience inwardly. So here we have a heartfelt counsel. Heartfelt or hearty talks about that which comes from the soul or the heart, the depths of someone. And counsel is someone's advice or even their purpose or the plan that they have. So here's a beautiful inward experience. When you have a friend who has from the bottom of their heart your good in mind, their plan for you, what they're cheering for you comes from something deep down within them, that they want something good for you. What an amazing, amazing, amazing inward experience. Oh, the joy to know somebody would cheer on you like that. Or the joy and the experience of you being able to cheer on someone like that and say, I'm here for your good. And if I could help from the bottom of my soul, if I could help influence you in a positive direction, if I could help give you the advice or the counsel, or just to say, my heart's purpose for you is that you would move in a good, healthy direction. I'm here for you. That's a beautiful inward thing that we compare to outward senses that bring us great joy. So here it says sweet as perfume and incense. So sweetness is something that we taste, perfume something that we smell, incense something that we smell, maybe that we feel. It's these external experiences. And so now we have, what if we have friends that care about us right from their depths? So good and so wonderful. It would be like tasting something sweet or smelling something really beautiful. I read in some commentaries when I was studying for this and heard someone say this, that in the ancient world when this was written, they didn't sweeten their food. Oh, it's interesting. So if we want to sweeten our food, if you're making something, you go, it needs to be sweeter, or even you get a cup of coffee or a tea and you go, oh, I want some sweeter. We dump sugar in it, or we've got different sweeteners that we put in and we go, this needs to be sweeter. Apparently, in the ancient world, at the time when that was written, they didn't sweeten their food. They hadn't really thought of that yet. They just discovered foods that were sweet and foods that weren't sweet. And so if you wanted to eat something that was sweet and have that taste in your mouth, you just had to discover, oh, this piece of fruit is sweet. And friendship kind of works like that. You don't really manufacture friendships as much as you discover them. Now I'm going to talk in a few minutes. You do forge them, you build on them, you work on them. But the experience of having a really good, heartfelt friend is sometimes when you just bond and realize that you experience something the same way, you like certain things the same way, or you see the world a certain way, the same, and you connect on it. And you just kind of walk away, maybe after meet them for the first time or spend a little time, and you go, oh, I like them. Oh, I think we're going to be friends. It's like sweet, but not manufactured sweet. It's like you discovered a food and you go, oh, that tastes good. Oh, we're really going to enjoy spending time together. Can you think of a time that happened to you where you met someone or you got to know someone or you grew up with someone and it was just like, we clicked. Oh, that was sweet. That's what a good friend is like. And that's what experiencing a good friendship, when you can connect on that heart, soul level, a really good friend, not just a companion, but somebody that you connect something deeper with and you go, oh, that feels really good. I love that. It's like smelling perfume. I don't know how to manufacture that. I know we can manufacture perfume now, but it just smells good. Number three, so we need friends, we need good friends, and then we need good friends to influence us. Proverbs 13:20 says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companions of fool will suffer harm. There's sort of a modern proverb or saying that is really popular. I don't think anybody knows who said it first. That says the same thing, that basically says, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. One of the things we intuitively know about friendships is that we are influencing each other. We are becoming more like the people we spend time with, especially the ones that we are deeply connecting with. And so we need to think about, maybe, number one, am I a good influence on my friends? Is it good that they're spending a lot of time with me? Do I have a heartfelt plan for them where I'm cheering for them? And the people that I'm spending time with, not just the companions, maybe some people I have to spend time with, but the people I'm really invested with and spend time with, where are they setting a trajectory for my life? You know, we know that early in life, the biggest influence for kids as they grow up and who they're becoming is their family, but there comes a time where that switches to their friends. And you probably experience that as you grew up. Maybe you're in that phase right now when you come into adolescence, become a young adult, and you realize my family, my parents had such a big influence on me, but now I'm becoming a lot like the people I spend time around with. People who, parents who have kids that are growing into those phases of life, as they become teenagers, that's a big deal for us because we hope and we pray, what? That they'd have good friends that would make a big influence on their life for a positive direction. Because we know that that's what happens. Our friends influence us. When we're friends with other people, we influence them. And the proverb says, if you walk with wise people, that is, step by step you live your life with people who are wise, you're going to become more wise. If you're walking in those deep relationships with fools, you're going to suffer harm. It's going to hurt you. In other words, show me your friends, and I'll show you your future, who you're becoming more and more like. Okay, before we close, a few application points that draw from those verses that we just read. You would say, okay, I'm convinced I need friends. I need good friends. I need good friends that influence me and I influence in a positive direction. How if you were sitting here today and said, I've got some friends, but yeah, that's a part of my life that has kind of taken a back, been put on the back burner, has taken a back seat in my life. And maybe I got to think about how to forge some friendships in my life, maybe reconnect with some friends that it's been a while. How would I do that? Here's maybe three things. Number one, be available. You know, a friend loves in all times. We need to put in our schedule. We need to open up time. In good times, we need to be there with our friends. In hard times, we need to be there with our friends. It's going to be hard times where you need to show up for a friend and you're going to think this is uncomfortable and I don't know what to say. It might be at a funeral home. It might be in a hospital. And if that is you and you go, I'd love to be a good friend, but this is awkward and I don't know what to do. I want to tell you something. You go, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. Nobody knows what to say and nobody knows what to do. Here's what you need to do. Show up. And what people will remember, maybe some great epiphany will come, you'll say the perfect thing in a hard time, but what people are really going to remember is who showed up for them in the hard times. Show up in the hard times. Be there. Yeah, there's things you can think of. You know, bring a meal, send a card, send flowers. There are things, but biggest thing, make yourself available in good times. Go drink coffee, play golf, do sports, enjoy the hobbies together, have fun, enjoy being a friend. Hard times. Be there. Show up. Regular times. This is a regular calendar week. Nothing great, nothing terrible is happening. Be available. Show up. Make time. That which is not prioritized in our calendars will not be a priority for us. Number two, be invested. Desire for what is best. Be curious. Be someone who wants from your deep heart of commitment for your friends, wants to then invest in them. Cheer them on when they are working on something, moving towards something. Get curious. Listen really well to your friends. Learn more about them. Help them when they ask you. It's important. Build a relationship. When they ask you for advice, to be ready to give it because it's out of a deep care for them. Care about what they care about. Put your soul into it. Put your heart into it. Find ways to help your friends be the best version of themselves. Care enough to bring them joy where you can. Number three, be influential. Care enough to talk about things that really matter. Be a good influence on their life. Expect that they'll be a good influence on your life. Ask for advice from your friends. Ask them to speak into difficult parts of your life. Really good friends will even, because they've built the relationship that can hold it, a container that can hold difficult conversations, will then have it when necessary to point out things that need to be pointed out, to give really good counsel and advice, not just to kind of go with the flow when they see that maybe something's going in an unhealthy or not so good direction. And when we do this, I heard Tim Keller say this, when we commit to these kind of things, there's two things that'll probably happen. One is you go, man, I want friends like that. Yeah, I desire that. We all do. And then you might also go, I'm not that good of a friend. Those things seem difficult. Requires a lot of us. It's true. You will not be alone if you feel that way. You go, oh, I've blown it. There's friends I wish I'd been there for better. Me too. When you get to those moments, think of this. Perhaps as motivation. Perhaps as someone to look to when you realize your own inadequacy. We become friends with people that we share something big with, something that just connects us, people who are like us in a certain way. And there's a paradox, Ralph Waldo Emerson talks about, that at the same time, we become really good friends with people who, one, we need a connection with, something that we're alike in, but also something that we're totally unalike in. So our best friends, the deepest friends we have, in some ways we go, we're just alike. In other ways, the paradox is we go, and we're nothing alike. And this is amazing, I think. Jesus had a reputation of being a friend to sinners. Do you know what I find so incredible about that, about the incarnation, that is God becoming, you know, stepping in divinity, crashing into humanity in the person of Jesus? He found a way to say, I am just like you. to the people. Everyone else said, the worst sinners. And it was so, like, people went, you can't be friends with those people. You shouldn't be like them. But Jesus saw, I'm just like you in our humanity. Deep down, we share so much of our desires and our longings, and that we were created in the image of God to be loved by God and to love other people. And Jesus connected with people because he was so much like us. He's just like us. And then he's nothing like us. And he's nothing like the sinners. And he's totally holy, and he's totally blameless, and he doesn't make all of the mistakes, and yet divinity crashing into humanity to show us what a true friend looks like, to connect with us and love us in that powerful way that we need to be loved. May that be our motivation. Jesus, our friend, a friend of sinners, and to take friendship, therefore, so seriously, because so much is at stake, as Jesus told us. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. So Heavenly Father, thank you for giving us a friend. A friend in Jesus. Help us to be good friends. Help us to have good friends, to forge those friendships and experience a love that brings great joy, that brings great support that we need in our lives. Thank you again for Jesus, who shows us what it looks like to be a friend. We rely on him ultimately as we love each other. In Jesus' name, amen.